Well, let me start out by thanking the organizers for their kind invitation to this great conference. I have to admit, I'm not totally sure to what extent my talk is really going to fit into the topic of this conference, because there's not going to be any index theory or C-star algebras or Hopf algebras or even A-infinity algebras in this talk. And maybe the only excuse for presenting this material here is that actually there should be. And I just haven't figured out those extensions yet, and maybe some of you will. So the idea is, well, to some extent, of course, everything is there a little bit. Okay, the idea is, well, just the observation that the usual Chambell-Cartan theory of connections on principal bundles has a very nice and natural generalization to non-commutative algebras. And in fact, this generalization has some nice applications. So all this is joint work with Anton Alexeyev, now in Geneva. And let me start out by just reviewing the usual Chambell construction. So the usual Chambell construction, one has a principal bundle, principal G bundle. Where G is a Lie group. I'm in the smooth category. This is a smooth principal bundle. G is a Lie group. I'm going to denote the Lie algebra of G by script G. And we assume that we have some connection on our principal bundle. So that's a Lie algebra valued one form. So the definition of connection is that, first of all, it's invariant, an invariant element. And secondly, if you plug in the generating vector field for some Lie algebra element, you just get that Lie algebra element back. So the contraction with psi sharp, the vector field generated by some element psi of theta is just psi. And given the connection, one can form the curvature f theta, which is d theta plus 1/2 theta bracket theta, using the Lie bracket. And then we can write down the Chambell map corresponding to theta, which is the map from invariant polynomials into differential forms on the base. And instead of differential forms on the base, I can also say basic differential forms on E. I identify this with differential forms on E, which are basic, meaning that they're both invariant and horizontal, so the contractions are all zero. And the map, as you know, takes a polynomial, and you just plug in the curvature. So the first fact is that this is a chain map. So it takes values in cocycles. So it's a chain map, if I take just the zero differential here. And it doesn't really depend on the connection, in the sense that if I have two connections, then the corresponding Chambell maps, they are chain homotopic, in fact, in the canonical way. So therefore, the map which I get in cohomology doesn't depend on the connection. So we get a Chambell map in cohomology from invariant polynomials into the cohomology of the base. It's independent of the connection. So this much for the usual Chambell theory. Now, all this can be brought into somewhat more algebraic context, as was done by Cartan in already 1950. So the algebraic setting is let's just make a definition. All we need is some algebra in which we have these operations of contractions, Lie derivatives, and differential. So the definition is a G differential algebra the differential algebra, the differential graded algebra. Okay. So the grading is mostly a Z grading, but actually it's enough to have a Z2 grading. Together with derivations. Yodak-Psi, so this derivation of degree minus 1, and L-Psi, a derivation of degree 0. Such that these derivations satisfy the usual commutation relations, graded commutation relations. So this is for all psi and g. Such that one has the usual graded commutation relations. So graded commutator of contraction with d derivative, with its differential is the lead derivative. Commutators of contractions are 0. Commutator of the lead derivative for the contraction is the contraction of the lead bracket. Lead derivatives commute with differential. The lead derivatives define a representation. And I'll just complete this. Of course, the differential is greater than 0. And so these are all graded commutators. Okay, and a connection in this context is an element theta in A1 tensor G, which just satisfies the same conditions as before. It should be invariant. And should have the satisfy the condition that contraction of theta with psi is equal to psi. So this is the algebraic setup. And now if the algebra A is commutative, graded commutative, the chain veil construction goes through just as before. There's absolutely no change. Maybe it's actually quicker to do this by just making some changes here. So A is now commutative. G differential algebra with connection. So this explains now some element in A1 tensor G. Now the chain veil map is defined just as before, except that it goes into A basic. As before, it's a chain map. The same proof as before. The usual proof shows that it doesn't depend really on the choice of connection, and so you get a homomorphism from from invariant polynomials into the cohomology of the basic subcomplex, which is independent of theta. And by construction, it's an algebra homomorphism. Basic means, as before, it's invariant and it's killed by all the contractions. So both horizontal and invariant. So if A is commutative, there's absolutely no change. It just goes through as before. So what actually goes wrong if A is non-commutative? Well, if A is non-commutative, in principle, the definition still makes sense. So even if A is non-commutative, you can define the curvature by the same formula as before. It's still horizontal. What becomes a little bit problematic is, what do we mean by P of F theta? What do we mean by plugging in the curvature? Well, even before, what do we really mean by this? One way of putting this is, you say that a polynomial we can view as a symmetric tensor. And then we just plug in the curvature in every slot. So that definition works as before. Same formula as before. Maybe in components, in terms of structure constants, d theta a plus 1/2 f a b c theta b theta c. I can write this down as before. So if a is non-commutative, the formula still makes sense. The problem is, this rule that I just described, taking a symmetric tensor and plugging in the curvature, it's not that natural, really. And it turns out it does not define a chain map. So that's the problem. It's just the whole construction breaks down. It's not a chain map anymore. In particular, the rest doesn't seem to make sense at first. So my claim is, what I would like to explain is, even if A is non-commutative, there exists a canonical, in fact, algebra homomorphism from invariant polynomials. The cohomology of the basic subcomplex, independent of theta. It's just that it's not the right construction. And again, I will have some applications and examples for this, but unfortunately, I have to leave those applications to the end. Okay, so to see how this goes, I really have to do the chain wave construction a little more conceptually, as was already done by Cartan's paper. That actually was sort of the point for him, why he introduced these notions. So what we're going to need is the so-called Wey algebra. So the Wey algebra is really the first example of such a G-differential algebra, which is not an algebra of differential forms on the G-manifold. And the shortest way of defining what the Wey algebra is just to say the Wey algebra WG is the universal commutative GDA with connection. That's the quickest way of saying what the Wey algebra is. But of course, it's quick, but still I have to justify the definition a little bit. So first of all, what do I mean by this? Okay, so it's universal among all the commutative G differential algebras with connection in the following sense. If A is any commutative GDA with connection, there exists a unique GDA homomorphism. I guess it's clear what that is. It's an algebra homomorphism which intertwines all the structures from the Wey algebra into A, which takes connections to connections. Theta, I'm going to denote this C theta. It's called the characteristic homomorphism. So it's a unique, up to unique isomorphism G differential algebra with this property. And the way it's constructed is as follows. Most of the construction is in our way algebra, we need to have room for the connection variables. So we take one copy of G dual sitting in degree one, which are going to be the connection variables. We need to be able to take differentials. So we need to have D of the connection. So we take another copy living in degree two. And then we take the commutative algebra generated by that. So we take the symmetric algebra, but in the graded sense. That's what it is as an algebra. So again, the commutative graded algebra generated by elements mu in G star of degree one. And another collection of elements which I denote mu bar of degree two. And the differential is just d mu is mu bar. The contraction of mu with some element psi is the pairing. And the lead derivative is the usual lead derivative. That's the co-adjoint action. So far I've written down what differential, contraction, lead derivative are on the odd generators, but on the even generators it just follows from the relation. I could write them down, but it's pointless. So this is the Weyl algebra. And the connection, of course, is just mu itself, if you want. So it's connection. You can say it's summation EA tensor EA in G star 1 tensor G. It's just a tautological element. Okay, so that's the Weyl algebra. So as an algebra, this is just the symmetric algebra over G dual tensored with the exterior algebra over G dual. But the symmetric algebra is generated by the mu bars. It's actually more common, in some contexts more convenient to not work with the mu bars, which are D of the connection, but instead work with the curvatures. So it's often convenient to replace the generator's mu bar by the curvatures. Mu hat. So mu hat is the mu bar minus some expression from the odd generators where this is just a map dual to the Lie bracket. Okay, so the reason is why it's good to work with the curvatures is that it's then easy to say what's the horizontal subspace. The curvatures are horizontal. And the horizontal subspace is just the symmetric algebra generated by the curvatures. So the horizontal subspace is the symmetric algebra generated by the curvatures. And therefore the basic subspace is are the invariant polynomials. And it's immediately clear that the differential is zero on the basic subspace, just because the differential has to change the parity, and here everything is even. So with zero differential. So therefore the cohomology is of course just also the invariant polynomials. Okay, so the way the chain Bell construction then works from Cartan's perspective is that if A is a GDA with connection, a commutative GDA with connection, you get this characteristic homomorphism. Differential algebra homomorphism. It's independent of the connection in the sense that if you have two such connections, the corresponding characteristic homomorphisms, they are not just chain homotopic, they are G homotopic. By which I mean it's a homotopy which also intertwines contractions and lead derivatives. And so we get a map for the cohomology of the basic subcomplexes, and it's canonically defined. Again, is invariant polynomials. Mm-hmm. So this is a somewhat more conceptual way of looking at the chain Bell construction. Okay, but so far we're still in the commutative world. And now what I want to do is somewhat try to make things non-commutative. Someone want to try to make things non-commutative. I mean, the Weyl algebra only works for commutative G-differential algebras with connection, and I want something that plays the same role for non-commutative G-differential algebras with connection. Well, it's very easy to change the definition. I mean, sometimes I want to omit the word commutative from the definition. So let's just do it and define it different. Weyl algebra. So just omit the word commutative. So I claim again this is well defined, that there exists a unique, up to unique isomorphism such non-commutative Weyl algebra. And the way you construct this, well, you basically force to construct it just as before. You take one odd copy, which corresponds to the connections, and you need an even copy, which corresponds to D of the connections. And then you take the algebra, which is generated by this, but it's not the symmetric algebra, because we don't want to, it's one thing to be commutative, so we get the tensor algebra. So it's just the algebra generated by such elements. And the rest is just as before. So certainly this non-commutative Weyl algebra makes sense. And this part of the story also goes through as before. If I now have any G-differential algebra with connection, I get this characteristic homomorphism just by definition. The same proof, the standard proof, as one checks, still works. So two such characteristic homomorphisms that canonically homotopic. So I get a map like this, but of course, at the moment, it's not clear what is it good for. Good question? I don't know. Yeah? Sorry, it's just to know about this. Okay, so far things work quite well, but of course the problem is now, what is this? The problem is that now it's not so easy anymore to identify what is the horizontal subalgebra of this W trilogy, or what's the basic subalgebra, and so it's not so straightforward, it seems, to determine what is the cohomology of the basic subcomplex. So far our plan hasn't really worked yet, but there's a theorem which in a way is a main theorem, if you want, but actually this non-commutative Weyl algebra and the usual Weyl algebra, they are G homotopic. More precisely, so there's the quotient map. So remember, we defined the non-commutative Weyl algebra as a tensor algebra and this as a symmetric algebra, so there's a natural quotient map. Or another way of looking at it is, well, the Weyl algebra has a connection, so there's the characteristic homomorphism, and this is the one. So this quotient map is a G homotopy equivalent.
On the right hand side here, so you change now W to W tilde. Now you take the same.
Oh yeah, of course, this is not anymore here. And here, it really doesn't really have to use curvatures. Okay, so the quotient map is a geometry equivalent. That's the meaning, it has a geometry inverse. Again, geometry means a homotopy which also intertwines contractions and lead derivatives. And the homotopy inverse is symmetrization. Graded symmetrization, supersymmetrization, if you want. Again, this is a symmetric algebra, this is a tensor algebra, and the symmetric tensors fit inside all the tensors. That's what the map is. So in particular, the cohomology of the basic subcomplex is, again, just invariant polynomials. As algebras. So, indeed, we get this chain Weyl homomorphism as before. Okay, so what's nice about this main theorem, if you want, is that it has a very easy proof. It's like a one-line proof. Well, actually, there's one little fact which one has to check, which maybe takes a few more lines. The symmetrization map really is a chain map which intertwines contraction and lead derivatives. But it's not hard at all, if you might imagine. It just takes a couple of lines. Once one knows that, the proof is as follows. So we have to check that these are homotopy inverses. So we have to look at the two compositions. One composition is kind of obvious. If I first symmetrize and then take the quotient map, I just get the identity map. That's clear. So the only interesting is the opposite composition. So if I first project and then symmetrize. So it's just the symmetrization operation inside the tensor algebra. Some projection onto symmetric tensors, if you want. I have to show that this is chain homotopic to the identity. And the way this is proved is as follows. to look at the following maps. The second map is take some elements x and y, and you just you symmetrize y and then multiply. And here consider two maps. The first map is just the inclusion, and the second map is the projection. So you see, if I go the upper way now, if I first include and then take the product, I just get the identity map. If I go the lower way, I project second factor and then symmetrize. So that's the symmetrization map. That's the projection onto symmetric tensors. And well, this homomorphism of G differential spaces and the Twine's contractions lead Rivkus differential. And so all I have to show is that these two maps are chain homotopic, G homotopic. But this we already know, because this tensor product carries two natural connections. One is the connection on the first factor, and the other one is the connection on the second factor. And those are just the characteristic homomorphisms. And so by the general fact, they're canonically G-homotopic. And that's the end of proof. Okay, so this is the proof of the main theorem, if you want. And now I should give some applications. So my first application is to the Bott-Shulman construction. As many of you will know, one way of looking at the Weyl algebra is that it's some sort of algebraic model for differential forms on the classifying bundle. So you're trying to make sense of differential forms on the classifying bundle by this algebraic gadget where you still have lead derivatives, differential, and so on. But there's another model which is often used and which arises in this Bott-Shulman construction, where you model differential forms on the classifying bundle by some double complex. Where CPQ is, let's go, Q forms on G to the P plus 1. And the differential on this double complex is, well, they're two differential, like double complex, the Rahm differential, and there's another differential, and this differential del is the alternating sum of pullbacks under phase maps, where del I of G naught dot dot GP just omits the I-th entry. Okay, so this is supposed to model somehow differential forms on the classifying bundle. And the G action is just the diagonal G action. So in particular, we have contractions at lead derivatives. They're defined by the diagonal G action. Okay. So one notes, for instance, that the cohomology of the basic subcomplex of this thing is exactly the cohomology of BG. So this is just the fact that cohomology of the basic subcomplex is the cohomology of BG, with real coefficients, of course. Now, here I haven't talked about the ring structure yet, but you can also get the ring structure on this in this model, in this Bott-Schumann model, as follows. So the ring structure goes like this. It has two elements in CPQ and C prime Q prime. I should be able to multiply them. And the way one multiplies them is, so this is a Q form on G to the P, and this is a Q prime form on G to the P prime. First I pull them back to G to the P plus P prime. More precisely, the first factor I pull back on a projection to the first p factors, the second factor on a projection to the last p prime factors. Now they both live on g to the p plus p prime, and then I can just take the wedge product. This is just the wedge product. There's also some sign involved, which I don't want to get into. But this really, the way the ring structure is induced. So with the right sign, the differential standard derivation, and it gives the right ring structure on H of BG. But the point is, now the ring structure on the chain level, on the co-chain level, is actually non-commutative. Huh? This is non-commutative. And in fact, as you may have noticed, it's very similar to the definition of cup product in singular cohomology. So where you work the front P phase and back P prime phase and so on. It's non-commutative. Only in cohomology it becomes commutative. Yeah, but this is exactly the setting we're interested in. Well, there's also a natural connection I should mention. Connection is just the Mauer-Cartan form. In any case, our machinery applies. So we get a canonical map from the Weil algebra into C, which is symmetrization. Let me put this more seriously. So we first map into W tilde G, a symmetrization, and then we take the map given by the connection. So the composed map, that's symmetrization again. Symmetrization for this non-commutative algebra. So this map is not an algebra homomorphism, but I can restrict. To basic subcomplexes. And the claim is that this induces an algebra homomorphism if I go to cohomology. So what does this really mean? What is the basic subcomplex? C is Q forms on G to the P. So the basic subcomplex, we basically just divide out one P factor. So this direct sum of Q forms on G to the P. So given any invariant polynomial, we construct a collection of differential forms on G, G squared, and so on. It's a completely canonical map given by the symmetrization procedure. And the claim is that this map induces a ring homomorphism once we go to cohomology. So So but Schumann has constructed such a map, but in a rather different way, where I think it's not so obvious that it gives a ring homomorphism, but you can somehow. So this is my first application. Second application is to the Duflo homomorphism. That's something in B theory. And well, I don't get this Duflo isomorphism in full generality. I have to make an assumption, namely that assume that the Lie algebra carries an invariant scalar product. I have to assume it's a quadratic Lie algebra. So I can identify the Lie algebra and its dual. Okay, now let's consider the following algebra. Let A be the algebra. Well, if you want, it's a quotient of my non-commutative algebra. Name it. It's the algebra of generators mu in some even copy, in some odd copy of G, and mu bar in even copy of G. So remember, we identify G and G dual. And the relations I impose are the commutator of mu and some other element nu should just be the product. So let's give this product a name, call it B. It's my bilinear form. The commutator between some mu bar and nu, so some even element and some odd element, is given by the Lie derivative. So add mu of mu. So the even copy acts on the odd copy by the adjoint action. The commutator of two even elements is add mu of mu bar. So on even elements, we just take the Lie bracket if you want. Yeah, and the differential, contraction, and Lie derivative, they're just induced from W tilde G. So we just take the tensor algebra on mu and mu bar, and we impose some relations. So let's see what has to be done here. So you see the odd generators, they define a Clifford algebra. The odd generators define a Clifford algebra over G. These are exactly the defining relations for Clifford algebra. The even generators, they define an enveloping algebra over G. But it's not just the tensor product between them, because the even generators act on the odd generators. So it's a semi-direct product between the two. So this contains the mu's, this contains the mu bars. So in this example, it's actually convenient again to introduce the curvature. The curvature variables as before. Because then we'll notice that the curvature variables actually commute with connection variables. And then we just get an ordinary tensor product. Where UG is really the horizontal subspace of A. So this is really some kind of quantized version of the usual Weyl algebra. So you compare the usual Weyl algebra with symmetric algebra tensor exterior algebra. So we've now quantized the exterior algebra to the Clifford algebra and symmetric algebra to the enveloping algebra. What we now get from our machinery is we get some. Oh, okay. Mu bars is the curvature, so maybe in terms of basis, EA hat is EA bar minus 1/2 FABC EDEC. So if I take some, say in a positive definite, I take an orthonormal basis, and then this is what it is in terms of structural constants. But I mean, even in the non-commutative case, the curvature is well defined. So I can take the curvature variables. So in this case, our machinery gives us some map from the usual Weyl algebra by symmetrization into this A, so, which is UG tensor Cliff G. And it's very easy to check that this is actually an isomorphism of vector spaces. It's a linear isomorphism. Gosh, it's not that easy to check because it involves Poincaré-Birkhoff-Witt, but given Poincaré-Birkhoff-Witt, it's easy. And so it induces a map on the basic subcomplexes, so from invariants invariant polynomials to, well, here the basic subcomplex, I told you the horizontal subcomplex is UG, so the basic one is invariant in UG. And our machinery tells us that once passed to cohomology, the lower map becomes an algebra homomorphism. But actually in this case, there's not even a need to pass to cohomology because the differential is just zero. Right, the differential was zero here, and it's an isomorphism, so also zero here. So this map on the nose is an algebra isomorphism. Get an algebra isomorphism. Invariance in the symmetric algebra to invariance in the enveloping algebra. That's various ways of thinking about this. If G is Lie algebra of some Lie group, then this is an algebra isomorphism between invariant constant coefficient differential operators on the Lie algebra G and bi-invariant differential operators on the Lie group. Pretty strong statement. For general Lie algebras, the construction of such an algebra isomorphism is due to the flow. And it's still a deep theorem. A not so deep theorem is that in the quadratic case, our algebra isomorphism coincides with the Duflo isomorphism. So this is the Duflo isomorphism for quadratic G, to emphasize. Before the Duflo isomorphism was considered a deep theorem for anything, basically for anything except for semi-simple Lie algebras. And there are many quadratic Lie algebras which are not semi-simple. So for the quadratic case, we have this very, very simple proof of the Duflo isomorphism. Strangely, it doesn't seem to work for non-quadratic G, and we don't really have any good idea of how to generalize it further. So you know, for general G, there's a new proof which basically is due to Concewicz using his deformation quantization machinery, but that I would consider a deep proof also. Okay, well, there's not too much time left. I should maybe remark that, I mean, as you will have noticed, all I've done here is it's really very elementary algebra. I mean, there are no deep statements involved at all. And so it's natural to expect that everything works in much greater generality. So one generalization of that sort was done by Andrew Cricker. So there's kind of a Duflo type isomorphism, not for Lie algebras, but for trivalent graphs, something in odd theory. The statement is very similar. And this Duflo isomorphism for trivalent graphs goes under the name the Wheeling theorem. It was first proved by Dror, Banatan, Lie, and Thurston. And so the same proof also works, with some modifications, the same idea of proof works to give a very short proof of this Wheeling theorem. No, it's not exactly the I would say it's a separate. I mean, the quadratic, it has something to say about Lie algebras, but again, only for quadratic Lie algebras.
Andrew Cricker's theorem, does it use.
It doesn't talk about Lie algebras at all.
There's no analog, like no ingredient there, which is the analog of.
Well, the way these things are some related is if you have a trivalent graph, so you have these trivalent vertices, and sometimes they merge, something like this, and these merging of two legs is analogous to contraction with some bilinear form. So indirectly, it comes into the picture. I think I just stop here.
What comes to my mind immediately when you have this, I mean, an example of such a G algebra A would be, I think, the algebra of Hochschild cochains of U of G. Algebra of Hochschild cochains of U of G with the cup product. I think it has this G algebra structure. Okay. And well, it's related to Duflo, to the center of Duflo. Uh-huh. I wonder, have you looked at it? Maybe one could.
No, Celine. No. We all our other applications are certainly of this Lie algebraic sort, but no, that example we haven't looked at.
Maybe you could clarify the flow in general. Well, I'm not sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't mean, it's okay.